All right, thanks very much. I was fortunate indeed to be involved in this project with some excellent partners. I want to address the comment that was made in the last session. I don't think any of the speakers stayed, but that article by Ken Giller came out about the same time this project started. And it was really a huge disservice to the effort towards conservation tillage. It said that conservation tillage doesn't work, and we really had to claw our way back in the eyes of policymakers and officials, including extension officials, I think partially due to that article. And as we just seen in the last talk, it does work. And there's a yield depression like there is in any transition. And anyway, that's my piece, and I wish the target of my wrath was still here so we could talk about it, but she's gone. Ken Pauschen was here earlier too, but he came out with an excellent article last year, Why Soil Management That Increases Organic Matter and Tightens the Nitrogen Cycle Can Yield These Powerful Synergies, Including Fertility, Biodiversity, Reduced Erosion and Runoff. So that's, you know, what I'm hoping to talk about with conservation agriculture. We have these three components: minimum soil disturbance, permanent soil cover, and crop rotations, each of which has distinct challenges that we've talked a lot about already in these two sessions. Tillage really works, you know. You got hard soils, you know, soften them up. There's a lack of tools to do any other kind of alternative tillage approaches. Permanent cover, we've talked a lot about the problems with residue being eaten by one thing or another or used for fuel. Crop rotations or using cover crops, really, you know, if you can't eat it, why grow it? And that's really an issue with cover crops here in the U.S. as well. This is the slopes of Mount Elgon. It looks like Iowa when I was a kid. Black soil everywhere. And then we had the conservation tillage movement, you know, supported by NRCS. But the plow is, you know, usually these have been passed down for generations. They work. Farmers know how to use them, and it's an uphill battle to replace this technology. But this technology on slopes, you see here, the erosion down to the plow pan, which pretty much happens every year on these Mount Elgon slopes near Kapchorwa, Uganda. So this is the study area on the Uganda-Kenya border. On the slopes of this extinct volcano, we had two highland sites, Kapchorwa and near Kitale, Kenya, Kapchorwa, Uganda. Tororo and Bungoma are lowland sites with much lower potential soils and much higher population densities. We use co-design and co-innovation approach to develop and evaluate tillage systems and cropping systems. We use this co-design approach where we met and really tried to co-design systems that address the problems. So farmers would describe their typical system, and we would kind of point out the issues that we had to try to work around to improve the conservation aspects of those systems. We use this co-innovation structured engagement, and this really became kind of a contract with the NGOs we were working with. So it worked great to just have, you know, at least every 2 weeks to be engaged with those on-farm locations. These are the treatments: regular plowing, minimum till, non-inversion tillage, and then no-till, and then the second factor would be the farmer practice, a maize bean intercrop in this case, a relay cropping where we put in a legume cover crop just before bean harvest. And so the beans in between the maize rows. And then a strip intercropping. It's more of a narrow rotation in strips where it's narrow enough that the crops interact agroecologically. We looked at grain yield. I'm not going to talk about grain yield except to mention it. Soil organic matter, components at four depths, and then inline penetration resistance and inline interview. So this typical system of corn maize bean intercropping, you know, works really well. It's hard to bring in new systems to compete with that right off the bat because farmers know how to do it. This is our Makuna cover crop, and it's, you know, it's impressive. It actually, in the relay, if we planted it too early, it climbed up the maize and sort of took over the whole plot. Doing cover crop research in Wyoming, you know, I really have fond memories of this stuff that actually grows. So at organic carbon at our four depths, I'm not going to show all the slides like this, but this just shows sort of the, you know, the reality. The moldboard plow is kind of uniform here, and we're getting stratification with the reduced tillage. I think it's easier to look at this way. So we're getting a lot more stratification. This is nice. Hard in the no-till, and a continued sort of, you know, stirring up of the carbon in the, so, you know, significant increases with reduced tillage, non-inversion tillage in the surface layers of the soil. Same with total nitrogen. But averaged over those top 30 centimeters and weighted averages, you can see that there's not a big change so far in organic carbon. Tightening the nitrogen cycle. This shows that in that surface horizon, our reduced tillage is tightening the nitrogen cycle. Less mineral nitrogen, or less mineralization per unit of total nitrogen. Same with dissolved organic nitrogen. So less mineralization occurring in the no-till. I'm not sure what's going on in the lower layers of the minimum till. Potentially mineralizable carbon is staying more similar amongst the systems. And there was not a significant interaction in these with those three cropping systems. So these are averaged across those three cropping systems. Penetration resistance. I took this out and then I put it back in this morning. This line here is the moldboard plow, the conventional tillage. And you can see the penetration resistance starting at about 10 centimeters, about 20 centimeters. This is the plow pan right here. And after 3 years under reduced tillage or non-inversion tillage, we've started to lose that plow pan. And I think that is incredibly important for yields. And I forgot to mention yields. Yields were about the same, and farmers really noticed that they didn't have to do all that plowing to get similar yields, which really caught their attention. So we developed some minimum till tool, multifunction implement that we used on a lot of the farms for that that treatment, really trying to provide an alternative to that moldboard plow. And in these semi-structured interviews at the end, in all four locations, we had some recurring themes. They wanted to develop conservation agriculture systems for more cropping systems. We just tried to look at this one maize bean system because that's the staple, and we had a limited amount we could do. This idea of concentrating resources. So they really started to notice in that strip intercropping, they're only growing maize on a third of their field, but they could actually afford that amount of fertilizer to properly fertilize that. And then they had space for beans, which do better when they're not underneath the maize, and more space for a forage or cover crop, which builds the soil and eventually starts to probably reduce the need for fertilizer. But I totally agree with the comments that were made earlier. We got to start with fertilizer to increase biomass. A need for training on soil fertility. It took me a while to realize that most people didn't know really what I was talking about most of the time I was out there. and that came up at the end where we just really need training, how to use simple field soil tests, how to recognize deficiencies in plants. At the end of the project, and it's not our doing, but things were just turning around. Government extension has seemed really accepting of conservation agriculture, where at the beginning they were not. There's more tools available and a general trend towards adoption. So these are things that I would really like to continue with. Testing on-farm soil tests, this idea of concentrating resources in manageable field sizes, and then development of more conservation tillage tools. Thank you.